Hey, this is Holding Priority Podcast, episode 3. What is CEDH? What is tournament play? What's the difference? What's hot casual? Yeah, we'll be talking about that today. Before we go over that, though, I do want to announce that we have figured out a way to get the podcast out. Clearly, we've updated the audio. We should be on anything you listen to your podcasts on. If we're not, let us know. We can see if we can get there. Also, we will consistently be uploading every other Monday. So every 2 weeks on Monday, you can expect to listen to us and listen to all things CEDH or tournaments or conventions.
Magic in general.
Yeah. All right, let's get into today's episode. So one thing I think that is we should talk about that's really important is, to me, there's a huge difference in tournament CEDH decks and CEDH decks in general.
For sure. I think that if you can make any deck CEDH almost with the right mana base and free spells. However, there's commanders that outvalue and are better on a higher tier.
Yeah, I mean, that I do think that there's certain colors that, you know, for example, Brea is blue farm colors, and you could not tell me that you could slap Brea on a blue farm shell and her perform as well as blue farm, all cards the same.
No.
Yeah.
I think that she would be higher than high casual. She'd be CEDH.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
However, I don't think she is in the same class as blue farm just because of the value in the commanders.
Yeah, I think those commanders being consistently basically in your hand and you have access to them all the time is a really big thing that is important in tournament play. Really, in my mind, tournament play is more consistency over resiliency, because you're not really trying to outlast the other contestants. You're trying to stay in and win. And if you can't stop wins, you're trying to win faster than anybody else. So you have to have a very clear path to winning in your opening hand. You have to have the ability to close 6 to 8 turns consistently. And 6 to 8 turns is like,
it's
several win attempts, one or two stopped. You should be able to push on 3.
That's success.
Yeah, yeah.
So most games are ended by turn 5.
Yeah.
If a game goes to turn 6 or 7, there's a pretty good chance it could go to time.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just what it is. When decks are all on the same level, you can get a lot of countering and kind of parrying the other person's win attempts and bring it to a slugfest. I've had them go an hour.
Oh, yeah. No, there's games where even though we are playing with people that have tournament decks, we will get to a point and we'll go, this has been a 70 or 80 minute game. Like, I'm cool continuing, but we've stopped 3 win attempts. We're all kind of run out of speed. Do we want to continue, or do we just want to this would have been a tie, shuffle up and go to another game?
Very, very true. I mean, it gets to that feel of, we're all just kind of sitting here.
Mm-hmm.
And again, though, in the time that it takes to get there, all of those win attempts, the game was really good.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of interaction, a lot of things going. There's usually a lot of stuff happening. But once the resources are exhausted, you are now really just waiting on somebody to finish the game.
Yeah. Or, you know, to get to the point where it's like, I have Krom. He's a 4/4. I can hit people in the face. I don't have any counters, but boy, can I slap them. Like,
yeah, just commander damage with Chrome.
Yeah,
for sure. And I've seen games go to time in tournaments, even with the fastest in the format.
Yeah.
So something like, Crick.
Yeah.
Or Magda.
Rog'Sai. We've seen a couple of.
Yeah.
They push, they get stopped, they build, they push, they get stopped. They try third time, and then by the third time, I think every deck is kind of exhausted, you know? And because everybody had to put in so much effort to stop somebody, then everybody is somewhat exhausted of their either value or win attempts or ability to go get it. Like, instead of getting a win piece, you had to tutor for a counter to stop this guy.
It becomes almost like chess.
Yeah.
You get that fatigue for sure.
Yeah.
I think that it is interesting because I hear people say different things about levels of decks. And really, I don't listen to the banter until we get to CEDH. And then once you're to that point, I feel like at some point there, you get to where you're more in tournament play.
Yeah. And another thing that I think is really important about the deck is you have a win condition that is somewhat hard to telegraph. Like, you don't really see it coming. I think, you know, there's a lot of decks that you have to put out your win cons and then pass turn, or have so much mana that you can cast it all at once, or you're just building such a big giant creature that everybody, you know, is able to see it and stop it. And everybody will throw in, you know.
It has to be the most efficient win for tournament play, and the one that is the easiest to shroud,
mm-hmm.
or the easiest to almost a pseudo silence, like Teferi line, which is Teferi Displacer, draw your deck with a zero rock, nobody can interact.
Yeah, the thing I like about Teferi combo in tournament play is it's everything it needs to be in one package. It's a planeswalker that basically silences. It itself is a combo piece with the silence. Displacer Kitten is 4. The whole combo is like, what, 7?
7 total.
7 total. And you do need a little bit more resources, but Teferi itself grants you those resources by bouncing rocks or docksides, you know, with Displacer Kitten.
Gains mana and card advantage, mm-hmm. same time.
Yeah.
And this is the difference in the win that we're talking about. Teferi line versus somebody with a net positive mana dork, mm. trying to pin Mizora.
Yeah.
That one is, it's more telescope. You can see it,
mm-hmm.
and you can also interact as that enchantment goes for the creature. So you can just pop it.
Yeah. And you know how you know that somebody's going into their Teferi combo? They play Teferi, and if it resolves,
it's over.
You probably have lost.
Yeah, it's like, over.
That is what you want to see in a CDH deck is like, oh, okay, this guy, he's just over here amassing value, maybe too much, but like, I'm not scared of him yet. And then all of a sudden, they just pass turn, tap 3, and go, Teferi? And you're just like, oh, okay, you know. We've lost. And Teferi, like, I will say it's a pretty fair combo too, because like, somehow, let's say you stop them, like, you, I guess you channel through Teferi is a way that you could do it, because everything has to be cast at sorcery speed, right?
Yeah, but it's a little bit harder too.
Yeah,
because I could, and this is protected, so let's say you try to, I don't know if Asaju hits it,
mm.
but let's say Odawara.
Yeah.
I think Odawara can pick up almost anything. I cast a spell, blink it, whatever you're targeting, I blink and now the target falls.
Yeah.
So it's almost not worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like,
yeah, it's very resilient. And what's funny is, like, it is not a combo a lot of people run because it's seven. It's seven, and the start of it is a planeswalker because it's easy to counter. So, like, even a combo that we're like, this is pretty good in tournament play, it's a backup. It's not your main win you're going for because it's seven. You know,
I would say, you know, the difference in the things we're talking about is the difference in Neoform into a Thassa combo instead of Thassa out and then consultation.
Yeah. I have two blue and a black. Let me try. You
know, like, exactly. Yeah. And then if it's counter, because the Neoform, you know, if you hit the Neoform, you know, cool.
Yeah.
I'll do it next turn, or I'll draw it, or I'll tutor it. It's that level of thinking, other than, you know, let me fireball the table for whatever, or, you know, even Kiki Jiki is a really solid line, because it's hard to, if it hits field, there's so many things that have went wrong already that it's already happened.
Yeah, and it's also, like, very hard to know when the point to react is, because, like, if Kiki comes out, and you try to swords Kiki, then in response, I tap Kiki and I get something.
Yeah.
And like, in tournament play, people will know when to interact. You interact when Kiki is tapped and targets, and then you remove the target.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like, it's been interesting because we have played in a fairly big community. And we have all level of play. We have casual people that's all that they want to do, and that's cool. We have people that have seen the cool matches with CDH and have gone, I really like the interaction piles. I want to learn that. You know, let me play a Doomsday pile deck. And, you know, there's pet cards that they need to remove, but like they're there, they're trying. And then there's the people that are like, I have played Blue Farm for 2 years. I love Blue Farm. And it's been very interesting to exist. And we've only been playing for about a year and a half. So like, we leveled up to where at the beginning, we thought that Shieldred was Shieldred of the Apocalypse was like the most broken deck ever. You know,
it was a pet deck of mine. Initially, I kind of evolved from there's best mana rocks in slot to, okay, now the commander doesn't value enough.
Yeah.
And Shieldred, while it's great, Crick is a bad...
Yeah.
Whatever his name is.
Kirik.
Kirik?
Yeah, yeah. Kirik, I just say Crick, commander. But yeah, yeah.
Or, you know,
Post Malone.
Yeah.
Alt art. Yeah. Post Malone is a good commander.
Yeah. Post Malone's
great. Yeah. It's been interesting though to level up through that. Cause I mean, basically what soiled us, what darkened our souls was losing to somebody that had a Hydra deck that would just Thassa's out. So we felt like we were just slugging it out. And then he just watch us get exhausted and go, Thassa's Oracle.
Yeah.
And it's funny because like we thought that was CDH. And it is to an extent. But as we kind of picked up on the meta and then started playing in local game store tournaments for like, you know, boxes, not huge prizes. And then we kind of got that experience and we were like, oh, we're really good. Maybe let's go for the bigger tournaments where they're doing $600 prizes. And then we went there and we were like, my God, like, you know,
I don't ever think that I'm too good to learn. However, you know, I do top 16 So just by proxy, I feel, you know, that I'm more adapting than other people possibly.
So yeah.
I'm fairly humble. Yeah. However, it has been a journey as far as casual to, you know, high powered to CEDH to really this tournament play.
I never really thought that there was a difference between CEDH and tournament play. And then, like, you know, not to name drop again, but I saw Comedian win all the time. And I was like, how does somebody in a 4-player game where if everybody piles on you, you lose, just keep getting these wins? And the more I watch these tournaments, and then when we went to our own big boy tournament, we were floored. Like, I was scared the entire time. Like, it was interesting because, like, I remember likening it to there are 4 starving people at the table, and you've only put down enough food to feed one. There are no scraps. Everyone is scrambling frantically for every ounce of value. And if you are just, you know, a little hesitant to dip your hand in, you don't get anything. Like, you're done. You just go hungry, you know?
Yeah. It's the community. The players are ruthless in game.
Yes.
The community is very, very welcome.
Fantastic people. We're all having a great time. We're all smiling. But if you could just see what the cards are doing, you'd be really interested as, like, why is everybody having a good time?
Yeah. And most tournaments have clear advantage within, you know, turn 3. there's somebody.
This is kind of a side note, but just a day, what do we get, 12 high in a stack?
Oh yeah,
yeah, for sure. Yeah.
that was a really fun stack for me.
Yeah,
but it's one of those things where all fights are on the stack, and, you know, timing is the way.
Yeah. And I was really glad that when we went to a tournament game, we had very good understanding on what the stack was, when you could interact. We really understood priority. I would have been very nervous to go and the game mechanics not be something that I was a master of.
Shout out to Krakashima.
Yeah,
it will teach you this.
Yeah, yeah. Teach you and others.
Yeah, they'll learn quick. Or I'll take a 40-minute turn.
Yeah, yeah.
However, that's the 3 levels I've kind of placed it, or 4 levels rather, because you have casual, you have high powered, CEDH, and then tournament play.
And I would almost say high powered and CEDH, the lines blur. Yeah,
it's few cards.
And yeah, because, like, let's say, because we were talking about this today, I really loved Kibo when I started out because I just didn't like people having rocks. Like, rocks bad, artifacts bad. And I was like, you know, lucky what?
Banana.
Yeah, I was like, I'll throw rocks in this deck and I'll get a Jeweled Lotus. And I had them all. And I was like, I'll just see what happens. And it just, it didn't, it was still high power. You
know? Yeah. It all has to do to me with the value of the commanders.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say that there's never the diamond in the rough that comes up in the newest set or like something. Something that might come up. I've seen the master start to kind of work his way in.
She's so cool.
Yeah.
I love Fallout commanders.
For sure.
Yeah.
I enjoy the fact that there is some of that movement in ranking of certain commanders. However, I think where the line blurs to me is high power to CEDH to tournament. If I had to give my 2 cents on what the difference is in high power in CEDH, it would be zero rocks and zero spells. Mm-hmm. I think free of them, free spells, free rocks, ends up making very interesting mechanics, because you could overextend. You no longer look at somebody's mana and be like, they can do nothing.
Yeah.
You have to have the knowledge base of what are free spells in the colors that they have.
Yeah.
And then from CEDH to tournament, personally, I believe it's, as a player, maybe really good understanding of the rules. And
at minimum.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like yeah. that is a requirement to entry. Like, yeah.
Yeah. That's the ticket for the show. And then, you know, as was said, the amount of value that's able to be pumped out in a turn.
Yeah. And also the ability to turn one really come out running and knowing that you can keep up with that value. Before we had gone to a tournament, I'm not going to say that I thought Lay of Land Pass was an acceptable turn one, but I felt like if you had a great turn two, you could do that. And while that is true, like, let's say, you know, again, using today, I laid a land past, there were six rocks out, and then going first, I followed it up with a dockside. And that dockside got countered, of course, but, you know, it was interesting to see the amount of things in tournaments people do on turn one. There are times where I look at the board and I'm just like, this has gotten out of hand. And then they pass to me and I look down at my lands and I have one or two lands and I haven't missed a land drop. Like, you know,
I would say tempo plays.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the correct term. This is the term I'm going to use. For instance, you know, player one plays Aristic Study. It hits turn one. The amount of value that'll come back to that player turn two is potentially exponential.
Mm-hmm.
So whereas, you know, some people may force a will a commander, I would try to force a will that Ristic.
Yeah.
Not in every case, but in a lot of cases.
Ristic resolving will probably win that person the game. If the group is not extremely keen on working together to either stop it or pay it.
Yeah. I would say, dare I say, the big four, you know, Ristic, Mystic, Smothering, and Espers.
And Baseju, because it removes all of this.
Oh, well
yeah.
Point being, one of those hit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the value is there.
Yeah. And like, just to kind of wrap this section up, because I know that we have kind of moved around, and I hope it's been fun to listen to. But the thing that I think is really cool is there is such thing as Brewer's Advantage in CDH. And I always thought that that meant kind of not playing on meta decks. But recently, just out of curiosity, I pulled a bunch of data off of all of the published top deck GG tournaments from January 1st. And it was really interesting to see, number one, the conversion rates, but number two, just the diversity of the meta. I don't have the data in front of me, but I do remember one thing sticking out was top 60% of entries were about 12 to 16 decks. And then 40% of entries were decks that had entered less than 1%. So 40% of the meta is something you'll run into 1 out of 100 times. So if there's four people at a table and you're not playing it, every 25 tables, you will run into that deck. And that's 40%. And if I think about tournaments, while I do know a lot of decks that I see, there's also a lot of decks that I'll look at and I'll go, this guy shouldn't be here, or he's going to beat us senseless.
That's kind of where I was with the Master, just because the Master is somewhat new.
Yeah.
I had seen him a few weeks ago at a tournament, and I honestly, other than like colored wins, like what color win cons are there?
Yeah.
I really didn't understand what was going on.
There's going to be a Thassa's Oracle. There might be a Neoform to get it out, and then there might be a Court of Calling to get it out. Basically, any tutor to field, I'm a little scared of. Other than that, no idea what this guy's doing. It's a, hey, can I read your commander before we start your
card? Yeah, and even then, there's just not enough play at first with it. I mean, you can watch a lot of the YouTube and online things with all of those players there, and they play a lot of fun decks. However, I'm not going to say most of them, quite a few of them, I don't see that much.
Yeah, and I will say that, like, it does sound like we're saying, like, only certain commanders are worth running, and if you're not running those, you shouldn't play.
Actually, I would say it's the opposite.
Yeah.
If those win,
yeah,
awesome.
Yeah, it's the opposite of, there is a lot of diversity. Like, you do have to make sure that your deck is built around a strong commander. Example, you will never see a Kibo in a tournament. I love monkeys. I love giving people bananas, but you're not going to see them.
Same with a Shieldred. Most.
Yeah.
And those are just best in slot.
Yeah.
So if you're wanting to play a black deck.
Yeah.
Posty.
Yeah.
Or Magda.
I even forgot how I pronounced it. I was sitting here in my head. I was
Carrick.
Like, I know that there's an apostrophe, so it's K-R apostrophe R-I-K. Curitman. If you know how to pronounce it, please put it in the comments.
And for our buddy that's on all the tournaments that runs it, I'm sorry,
man. Yeah. I haven't read Kyrick.
I think it's Kyrick.
Kyrick. I don't know. Yeah.
Posts Kyrick.
It's not Krark, because
yeah, it's not Krark. I've said that.
Yeah, too. Yeah. So what do you think is an example of a deck that you see that people kind of agree is CDH, however, it would have a really hard time closing in tournaments? I think we've done a good job of going over, and there's a lot of like examples of, you know, CDH listings, but even in those CDH listings, what would you say you've looked at and you've gone, this deck is scary, but I don't think they've got it in 80 minutes.
So there's two that jump out there. And again, I have a buddy that plays it. But Karkashima, I think to be a very good pilot, otherwise that deck is going to take forever.
Yeah, that is a deck that if it gets into the top four, you might have a 3-hour top four, because there is no time limit there.
The deck is good.
Yeah.
I'm not discrediting the deck, but the way it storms and the way it plays is very time consuming.
For example,
personally,
there is an app that you can get on your phone called the Krarkulator, and it is almost required if you go beyond just having your commanders. You can easily take a 40-minute turn on Karkashima, and you're not wasting time at all. You've probably cast about 40 spells. They might be the same spell, but you might have cast around 40.
And that's not necessarily a good example, because Karkashima is a tournament CEDH deck.
Yeah.
However, I think Paco Holden is a possibility. It's a very strong deck.
Yeah,
but it's very,
I think Paco
clunky.
Yeah, so I used to play Paco Holden you used to play Tivit, and I thought it was Rug Tivit, basically, where it was two commanders in the command zone where you could take people's stuff and also play like Tivit. And that deck was really strong. In our pod, we were pretty afraid of the deck, but it would definitely get to the point where I'd taken so many things from people and they would just be like, are you winning yet? And a lot of it is you are trying to win through a infinite turn loop and also commander damage. And commander damage is almost always the easiest thing to do in Paco Haldin, because the infinite turn loop has a lot of hate on it, like trouble in pairs. That goes down, you have just gone to a face beat situation.
It sounds very similar to something like Obnixilus.
Yeah.
It's strong, strong deck. However, I feel it may be the colors, or it may be...
Yeah.
It's a weird way to say it, because it has enough value as the commander. The backup wind is, I'm going to beat you in the face with a 9/9.
Yeah, and most games do come down, at least in Paco Haldin, to I'm just going to hit you repeatedly, which there's a problem with Paco Haldin that is not really related to cards. It's if I know I am literally passing to my death, how long can I delay that? And sometimes that delay is, hey, let me work with the table, make a deal, and then they don't get to do the thing that they wanted on their turn, so they have to pass, and then we all get another turn. And sometimes that turn is, oh my God, if I pass the turn, he's going to hit me, and I don't want to get hit. What can I do? And you're not really sandbagging at that point. You are literally just trying to stay alive. And when you're Paco Haldin and you have all of those cards in Exiled revealed and you have a 20 giant Clifford on your side of the field, everybody's going to be sitting there and scheming and trying to stop you. And politics are part of the game. Like, you literally can't just sit there and talk for 80 minutes. But it's unrealistic to think that people won't band together and take fairly long turns trying to stop you when you clearly have a win and there's no way for them to realistically stop it, and then you just can't close it on time. That, to me, that's the problem with Paco Haldin.
I think a lot of that is some of the... I think that's the problem with a lot of the decks on that tier.
Mm-hmm.
Because like I said, Obnixilus is one. He's a strong commander. Maybe Rohan.
Yeah.
And again, those are both, you know, Rakdos. However.
Yeah, I would say the problem with those is you have to build those fast. So you are desperately trying to close before your window closes.
Mm-hmm.
But Paco Haldin is blue and green, so you have a lot of say at what happens at the table.
Okay.
So you're also by yourself extending the game through counters, and you're never really making a blue deck for the most part that doesn't at least go, while I won't be the fastest, I can stop it. I think Rog'Sai is kind of a outlier there.
Yeah, I think that one is just a quick Sonic deck.
That was Goblin mode. Like, that is just... I think to play that deck, you just have to turn off for a little bit, and you just kind of go into a dark place and try to push that.
You just start throwing cards on the table.
Yeah. I think there are a lot of decks that also, like, given unlimited time, would have a much higher win rate. Like Elvery of the Wild Court, like, she's scary. She basically sets up and you have to basically find a blue player that's going to Cyclonic Rift. And then you could still build on your turn and kind of get back into a position where the table still stays locked and you're really able to push a lot of stuff in, you know.
I think the ones we're talking here are CEDH
for sure. Yeah.
But they wouldn't be up. For instance, Paco Holden is Simic?
Right? It's red. So I always call it
Rug. No,
it's red, blue, green.
Red, blue, green.
There is a word for it. Tamir. Tamir. Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
I honestly thought.
So you don't outside of Paco, you don't really run a lot of red. You see red in the beginning. Your red is Tinderwall, who is green, you know.
Yeah.
Rite of Flame. Red is there to really just push the mana through. And then once you're there, your only other red spells outside of, you know, Pyroblast and stuff are not even really take another turn, but multiple combat spells.
I mean, the issue I would have with that one is where you have that, what stops you from building, you know, Dargo Thrasios instead?
Which can close, yeah.
It's one of those things where the deck, maybe it's not exactly the same. However, the Dargo Thrasios utilizes the colors in a better way.
Yeah, and I would say, like, really, we in tournaments, we have turbo decks and we have mid-range decks. But no one goes, oh, my deck is really good at 60 minutes, you know, like,
oh, yeah,
no one is like, oh yeah, you know, we're shifting to late game meta where, like, literally on the clock, you know, you're winning. Like, that is not ideal in any way. And some decks do perform really well there. Like, I keep kind of picking on Paco Holden, but, like, I think that deck is a powerhouse deck. It's very scary for your stuff to go missing from your deck and have people cast it. But there's a Tali now, and Tali does that faster. And also, you can food chain a Tali. You
know, less, like, less colors.
Yeah, like, and less colors.
More refined.
Yeah, I mean, a Tali with blue would be really scary.
Very true. I mean, it's good that a Tali kind of jumps out on the table, and then you're like, okay, does anybody have anything? Stopped it?
Yeah.
Cool. We're good for a turn or two.
Not even has hit table. A Tali has been cast. Oh no. Does anyone have a Force of Will?
Yeah.
No. Can anyone hard cast a Mind Break Trap? Mana Drain? Maybe? it's scary. It's good. Just since we have brought it up, I mean, since I brought it up, really.
For sure.
Yeah. I was looking to get this in. Do you know what the conversion rate on Atali is? 44%, which conversion rate is how often it gets into the top 16 when it's entered.
Oh, wow.
44%. It is 2% higher than Rog'Sai. And we have seen it multiple times at multiple tournaments in multiple cities. Like, it's funny that people just went, Dinosaur, cool. And I'm going to say that, I'm not going to say I discredited those people, but I did definitely think that a good amount of them were just like, I can play a Dinosaur in tournaments, cool. And then I started to look at the data and I was like, 44% conversion, like, I'm playing that now.
Like, So, disclaimer, I play mostly blue farm. I am seeing some of an issue with it. I think I'm going to try Rog'Sai.
You're going to drop a color and I might drop a color.
We're
both dropping white. Is white bad?
No, I just think that, hey, maybe it's a staleness. I've been playing it for a while. However, go fun, jump on the table with Rocco.
Yeah,
that sounds fun.
And I also play Rocco, and it's combo Rocco, very light stacks Rocco. And Rocco is pretty much, get to seven, have a burn or sack in my hand or on the field, and possibly have a veil of summer of silence because everyone's afraid of me, you know, as they should be. But if I'm just trying to get to seven, maybe I try to get to seven red instead of seven red, green, and white.
I think with cards like Born Upon a Wind.
Oh, yeah, that card is good.
I want to try to win on top of somebody's win. I just think that that would be cool.
I had never seen until today someone politic a, well, I'm going to silence this guy that is currently winning. You guys should let it resolve. And then me go, we should not. I usually don't throw in too much on Rocco. I used to really like counter spells, but it's been really interesting to play a deck where I can't back up on counter spells, and I only have about three to four things that I can toss in on. And I tossed in on that. I was like, please do not let this guy trick us into silencing a win attempt, which sounds weird to say out loud. And then Born Upon a Win while we're all silenced and win. Like,
so
that card is crazy.
So this wasn't some secret person. This was me. So,
okay. All right. I wasn't going to show you like that, you know, but it was you.
I didn't lie.
Shame on you.
I didn't lie. So initially I was telling them, if I silence it, he can't cast any more spells.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, you know exactly what's in my hand all the time.
Yes.
Whether you see it or don't. Like,
it's the value that's on your side. And I can't even tell you how I knew, but I knew.
But the stack had multiple counters, a silence, an ad nos. So and I went on top of it.
Yeah.
With a mnemonic, I think.
His own ad nos that was stopped. And then he just went, eh. Like, this is the thing that got to 12. Now, granted, there was like three Rhystic Studies, a fish, a Smothering Tide. And, you know, I'm sitting there with a mana dork, you know. it's turn like three. And you know that just, when you're not playing blue, that just kind of happens sometimes. Yeah, that was fun. That definitely was worth the distraction.
we digress. This happened maybe,
you know, like an hour ago.
Anyway, with the commanders, I would say, you know,
we are good at this podcasting.
Hopefully, great. You guys like it.
I don't think anybody's listening.
Nobody's listening anymore. Well, let's finish up our.
If you are, like and subscribe, leave a rating on your podcast app of choice or all of them. You know, we're really trying to do this more often, and we've upgraded the podcast, and we want to do it a lot more. So if you like it, tell us. If you don't like it, also tell us, because we'll get better.
So we've been to a few tournaments. What are some problems you see with it? Because go ahead. What do you think?
So, and this is going to come off like an old man rant to begin with, but I just recently started playing MTGO. My God, is that system great for Commander? So MTGO doesn't really put a time limit on the round, which is a problem with organized play. You do need to give people a schedule and say, you're going to be here from 11 to 9. And then if you get in top 16, you might be here longer. That is very fair and very challenging. However, 80 minutes where everybody shares it and there is no limit to what one person can take causes a lot of friction and frustration. And a lot of times where it's like, this guy's playing really slow. He said he's thinking, should I call a judge? MTGO is different. What MTGO does is every time you have priority, it ticks down on a clock, much like competitive chess, where competitive chess does have this problem and has fixed it through this. Now, I don't think it's fair for everybody to hit a clock every time they need to pass. But I do like that MTGO just goes, okay, this is supposed to be an 80-minute round. Everybody has 25 minutes of actions. If everybody takes 25 minutes, yeah, that is 100 minutes, but not everybody's going to take it. So if you're that person that sits there and tries to squeeze every single ounce of time and goes, you get punished in that way. And I have seen quite a few tournament players go to that line of thought where, yeah, you do want to rush through, not really rush through, you want to take your time, but you want to efficiently use your time to take your turn, because if you take longer, that's less time for you to win the game.
Yeah.
But people that are losing, that just want to tie, will sit there and try to absorb time and take somebody's win, where it's very clear, given enough time, this person will win, or given another turn, this person will win. And that has been kind of the issue that I have seen with tournament play.
I have another argument with it personally. I feel that we go to many different ones. Our local is not the best at organizing.
There is a lot of kitchen table talk there too, because it's all friends, which is so cool, you know, but not in a tournament.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I would say consistency. I do know, and when I say consistency, consistency in rules, consistency in structure. What is the app that we use that makes it?
I could talk about this in an entire other podcast. Command Tower. Yeah.
So, and we'll just touch it.
Touch the. We could do another hour on this. Yeah, but it is good to bring up. I didn't think about that.
Command Tower is the start of it.
Mm.
I do think that a uniform set for rules and things would make it easier. Instead of trying to learn random things and then kind of at the judge's whim.
Yeah.
However, again, I'm just touching.
Yeah.
I'm going to go in.
Real quick, just to kind of explain why this is a problem, is we have done a lot of tournaments in a lot of places, and just the tiniest things, like, do people roll for first at a tournament table or not? Even though the system sits you there, do people roll? Are the matches 80 minutes? Are they 85 minutes? Are they 90 minutes? Because it doesn't seem like that 5 to 10 minutes makes a huge difference. But if I am going to a 90-minute tournament, maybe I do play Paco Halden, because I consistently can get there, you know? You know, it might change the deck that I'm playing. We've played at a tournament that's an hour and 45 minute rounds, which is 105 minutes. It's a huge amount.
I think at that one, we finished the game and played four other games in between.
And then one table used the entire time because there was, that's a different story.
It's silliness. I would say structure on it would just make it so much easier. I mean, I see things as silly as, when does the clock start?
Yeah. Is it before Mulligans? Is it after Mulligans?
Is it during, you know, what is it?
Is it when, during the first draw? Like,
consistency in the rules, I think.
How do we Mulligan? Do we just free for all it?
And the point system is a big thing too. I do think Command Tower has a good skeleton.
Yeah.
I think it's evolving.
Yeah.
But I would, if you're listening to this and your local shop is trying to have somewhat of a tournament, please let them know about Command's Hour.
It's $5 a month. We're not sponsored by them.
No,
we just really like it. Like it is, it's $5 a month that you can write off on your taxes.
write it off. It gives structure so that, you know, your local game lady guy person isn't trying to freestyle a tournament for some kind of high prize or box or something.
And it has default settings. So if you just want to play at the default settings and provide a consistent experience, you can. If you have decided that you want to do something different, that is also available, which is cool.
Again, just touching the surface on that one.
Yeah.
I would say that's the biggest is consistency among different places. Time limits on turns is a little funky. I mean, I get that certain turns have different time available.
Yeah.
And let's say you pass and you're about to lose. Like, obviously, there's a lot of pressure and thought that can go in. So yeah. I get that.
And I think we've actually done kind of a disservice to the listeners. I just realized that we didn't discuss what is important about not tying and what a tie is. So if you've been listening this far and you're confused, I really hope you stuck around. But in tournament, you get five rounds of Swiss, then it knocks down to top 16, and then that 16 table goes to an untimed top 4 in most cases. I'm going to talk about just in general. A win is 5 points. You need 2 wins to even be considered in top 16. It matters on the size of the tournaments, but really at 10 points, you can think that you have a shot at top 16. A tie is 1 point. So the entire table loses a point. So instead of giving 5 points, that table is behind and only gets 4. And if you're thinking, well, how do you get 10 points if you tie every round? You don't. A tie is a fifth of a win. It is not good. If you already have your 2 wins, it is a good way to kind of make sure that you get into the top without losing. But if you tie every round, you'll get 5 points. You won't make it to top 16, even though you've never lost. If you win a round and then tie 4, you'll get 9 points. That is not 2 wins. Even though you've won and never lost, you will not get in a top 16. So it definitely matters. And I think it is a good system. I'm not saying that a tie should be more, because if people start to go to tying is how I win the game and get into the top, that sounds miserable.
for sure. You would just see a lot of stacks and random.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to close it. Yeah.
I do think that, like I said, the systems are kind of evolving. We're getting more refined. Things are getting a little better. Mm-hmm. More people are learning about some of the structures. And we've seen very unorganized and we've seen very organized. Mm-hmm. And it's such a better experience to have it organized. It feels, just as a player, you're not frustrated. You have a decent understanding. I've been at one where, you know, where there was no judge. The judge was the shop owner, which
we went to one yesterday that was like that. Yeah.
pretty rough.
Yeah.
Because they're you're at the whim of their understanding of the rules.
Also, if they're with a customer, you gotta wait.
Yeah. And yeah, it's silly.
Yeah.
Consistency on that front and differences of what you're supposed to kind of consider as you're playing, mm-hmm. to me is what really changes the thoughts of I'm going to play cards, not to pick on green, but I'm going to throw bunches of forests down, big creature swing right, you know?
Yeah. The thing green does is not great in Commander, unfortunately. I love it. It's my color, but
it's the difference of that and really strategic play of I've even seen some of the top people at some of the tournaments be like, hey, we're all in with these amount of points. Let's tie it so we get a little bit of time.
That is another problem in my
mind.
I came to play.
Yeah. I've seen it. And you know that I'm talking about the top table.
Yeah.
Not the tables that are still scraping for the end.
Yeah.
But usually they break you down into a winner's table-ish and people that are still, you know, behind on the mm-hmm. point system.
Yeah, you should match up with a table of not like-minded, but players that performed the same during the day.
Yeah.
I think we are probably at a good point to somewhat wrap up. So we've talked a lot about CDH and tournaments. What would you say really defines, to kind of summarize overall, if someone is playing CDH and they want to know, do I have a tournament deck? What should they look for?
I don't want to be the guy that's like, look at the statistics.
Mm-hmm.
But the statistics is a good tool to see win rate. I mean, was it top deck? Is it top deck? Top deck.
Yeah, there's top a lot. 16. Top EDH 16, CDH list, top deck. Yeah.
There's multiple systems that show the brackets, mm-hmm. and you can see top decks.
Yeah.
And you can honestly see movement and what cards are getting played and what cards aren't.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that's a big play on it. And then really, if you've got something brand new, and again, I'm going to pick on the master a little bit.
Let's
take the master, for instance. There's not a lot of information about it. So mm-hmm. I would say try it. Put it out there. See what you get. Because if you're... it excites me to see a deck like that.
Oh, yeah.
But that's where it's at. You would need to see it. And if you're, let's say you're not necessarily at a CEDH, but you think you're right around there, I would say watch some tournaments and see what they counter, what they play with, like, what is it that they're trying to do? What is important on that counterspell? Because the reason behind it really changes how you look at things.
Yeah. On my end, I would say if I was like, I am CDH, I am doing well in my pod, I would like to take it to the next level. It's really... can you consistently close? Can you look at your hand and keep what you think is a good hand? And then within three turns, you have the ability to push a win attempt. If you're there and you do notice that your board state is consistently full and you always make those decisions to get there, I think if you understand the fundamentals of priority, stack, you know, when the ability to interact, when to shut things down, I think someone should really try it out. Even if you're just face checking the tournament to see. Really, I don't think I was ready for my first one. I entered a Najila that had no duels and all shocks. And once I face checked and I was just like, oh, this is what a tournament's like. You can lose every round, but if you're losing every round and you're coming out with lots of knowledge and experience, you might not lose every round in the next one. And within three or four, you're taking home a prize, you know, and that prize might just be your entry fee back, but a free day of playing Magic sounds awesome, you know?
And again, I can't stress on the community. Don't ask the questions in the games.
Yeah.
But banter on the side. You know, if somebody's playing a deck that you really enjoy or you've really been interested in, usually, and I'll speak for myself and some others that I know, we don't mind answering some questions. Yeah. I'm not going to answer what my win con is in my deck while I'm playing. However,
after the round, though, they will, and they'll be like, do you want to see my deck list? And not even care if you're going to top 16 with them. Like, that's the thing I think is cool is not only are people happy to be there, happy to somewhat teach outside of the round, but they'll literally be like, I don't even care if you look at it. Like, I'm so proud of this. You want to see the list? It's cool. Like,
yeah, this is my take on it. Yeah, I've seen a lot of that too.
I've had people after we're done hand me their deck and go, look through it. I'm just like, what? I can see you again. Like,
be respectful of people's cards. Yeah, yeah. There's lots of money in these decks. Mm-hmm. However, we're pretty proud of what we try to do, and the community is really well. Mannered rather, and that's my take on it.
Yes, and really, just to kind of close, if you're interested, ask somebody, and if you don't have anybody to ask, you know, listen to YouTube podcasts, and if you've kind of done your homework there and you think you're ready to go to a tournament, please bring a friend. It's much more fun to bring a friend.
Yeah,
but you will probably leave with a new friend, which is also really cool, and it's a great experience, and it's a great community. I mean, we like it enough that we started a podcast, so it's cool.
Yep, I think the veil behind it is something that a lot of people don't see, and that we have personally been enjoying as far as playing at all these different events, and I think that on the common game store, when you go in, there may be some casuals that have a bad look at CEDH. However, most of the players are really interested in your take on certain decks and what you're doing. Like, we're there to have fun and play as well.
Yeah, you play a game to have fun. And then there are people that they get caught up in the moment, but at the end of the day, everyone looked at Magic and said it would be a lot of fun to play that, and that's why we're here.
You know? For sure. And again, if you guys like stuff like this, leave a like on it, subscribe to it. You know,
comment, rate us 5 stars, show it to your friends, listen to it while you guys play Magic. Like, that's cool too. really whatever. We're just trying to get out there. We have a lot of fun. We've been seeing a lot of people listen to the podcast, and we'd love to grow it.
We are growing, so if you have any questions, or I don't know about answering too many questions, but if you have any, you know, tidbits that may help us out, or things you might want to hear about or see, let us know.
Yeah, we have Instagram, we have Twitter, we have YouTube. It's probably best to reach out to us on Twitter. But I mean, we're there, we're having fun. It's holding priority everywhere. Yeah. Well, thank you guys for listening to the podcast, and hope to see you back 2 Mondays from now. So skip a Monday, then next Monday during work or after work, we'll have something for you to listen to. So look forward to it.
Have fun in any games you play till then.
All right. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.